But so says Jehovah. Even the captives of the mighty man will be taken away from him, and the prey of the violent one shall be rescued. I will contend with your adversary, and I will save your children. Isaiah 49:25, the Word Green version of 2003. I'm trying to see, is there any correlation between the verse number and what we're studying? Just to be sure here, let's just verify. Let's see. Yeah, we did number 24 was yesterday. Little children, we had number 312 video for the year yesterday. And it was, no, it was, sorry, yeah. Yeah. And it was number 1186 since we began numbering the videos. And it was, it was chapter 6, paragraph 6 in the Ark of Urartu. So we did all the basic astronomy yesterday. We don't have to go through that again today, but we're going to look at the pictures again of the astronomy. Perhaps at least one of them. And so I wrote back at the time, this was March 3rd, 2011. Sorry, this is March 2nd, 2011. Because it says March 3rd the next day. So, 2100 hours, I wrote, hello again and good night as the night begins, and I have returned with the very much anticipated lemons. I also bought a truckload of other things, food. And since the hour is approaching lateness rapidly, I now do retire. The next day I wrote, 1100 hours, March 3rd, 2011, I am up and the fire is going. But it took longer than expected to get to bed last night. I made it up before noon, and maybe an hour later than sometimes. But maybe an hour later than sometimes. Suggesting I get up around 10 o'clock at that time in the morning. I was... But it took longer, I said, to get to bed. I didn't go to bed at 2100 hours the previous night exactly, but then I wrote, it's time to put the tea on, and wow, the sun came out. 1111 hours. One of the things that really helps is when I say to myself, how does the Bible say to view this? How does the Bible say to view this? Then I get answers like, God loves a cheerful giver, and two are better than one, from 2 Corinthians 9:7 and Ecclesiastes 4:9. Better is it to dwell upon a corner of a roof than with a contentious wife, although in a house in common. I don't know why they pop into my head. Old habits, Proverbs 21 and 9 and 25 and 24. As John Hawkins once said, it's not enough to repent. You have to then produce works that befit repentance. Luke 3 and 8. Getting back to our story about Osiris disappearing on the 17th day of the month of Athar, also called Hathor, when the sun was in Scorpio, or, quote, Scorpio was in the ascendant, end quote. We saw that from Mr. Hislop's book in the footnote with regard to the time when Osiris was set afloat in the wooden box, or in other words, the date of his death approximately. As the myth goes, or the legend about the death of Osiris, it gave us the date of Hathor 17. What does it mean? I asked myself at this time, March 3rd. What does it mean? Scorpio in the ascendant? I didn't even know what it was. 11:40 hours, that's right. I had no idea about some ascendant. Somehow I found out more about it on the internet. That it has to do with the rising of the sun and the path it takes across the sky and whether the constellation rises first. Of course, it doesn't rise first. If the constellation is in the ascendant, that means, well, it's hard to, you don't know, right? Does it rise first or not? Okay, but it doesn't mean it rises first. It means it's in the ascendant, so that it will rise. Well, I don't think I anywhere have established this, but okay. But let's read on. Okay. At least. That is what I thought it was, so I asked myself at that point, what did the sky look like back there when Osiris died? And we have SkyChart, the program that could show us exactly what the sky looked like at any date in history. Or even before history, it can show us all the time periods. Theoretical. Because, I mean, yeah, and was there any sky prior to 5550 when Adam was created? Or was the creation a literal 6 days? And all those things are not answered by a program like SkyChart. It just calculates the position of planets as they would have been projected backwards in time. And what date would it be anyway when Osiris died? I asked myself. 12:03 hours, firstly, on the date for Osiris, I found out from Almagest ephemeris calculator that 2,000 years, no, 12:16 hours. In my notes for 2011, February 25th, I noted Hathor 17, the 28th year of Osiris, from Mr. Wilkinson. That book to which we referred yesterday, one of them was by Mr. Wilkinson. And then I noted that his was about the manners and customs of the ancient Egyptians. Manners and customs of the ancient Egyptians. And then I noticed an heliacal rising of Venus, September 25th, 2747 BCE, seen at Eridu. You see, and it's not that critical where you are when you're looking at the sky, because these things are far away. So, I mean, the planets and stars are so far away that you could be almost, you have to be somewhere maybe roughly in the vicinity, but not really. It's not very critical. You see, but from Eridu, this is the picture we got. We were looking at it yesterday. The rising of the sun, Venus, and Mercury. Oh, just a second here. Yeah, it's let's just make it a tiny bit smaller here. So we can... It didn't even help, did it? It's somewhat blocked out by the photo of yours truly there. The video. Picture in picture. But Venus and Mercury are right there, see? Adjacent to the picture in picture of yours truly. And also the Sun is just below and to the left of Mercury and Venus here. This is just a couple of hours or so after sunrise. It's 8:57 local time in the morning. 2747, September 25th, which we've already established, was in that year 2747 represented as minus 2746 in the conventional way of representing it. That's 2747, and the September 25th is Hathor 17 in that year, which we already established yesterday. So we see the Sun is just, you know, it rose here, over here to the left somewhere, right? And the place where it rose is also the place where the constellation Scorpius is now. So Scorpius is in the ascendant of the Sun. So without knowing whether saying something is in the ascendant means it rose first or it rose after the Sun, without knowing that, this beautiful, magnificent simulation shows us that Mercury and Venus are in the ascendant with the Sun at the same time as Scorpius is rising after the Sun, in the ascendant, in other words, of the Sun. So this is maybe what it means, in the ascendant. It means it rises after. And the reason why that would also be, well, there's no reason why that would be true as opposed to Scorpius rising before the Sun, but at least I can't think of a definite reason. There are probably easily ones we could postulate, but we're not interested in that so much as the facts. So Scorpius here at the setting of the Sun that same exact day, right there at 6:14 local time, September 25th, 2747 BCE, is with Scorpius to the left of the Sun here, or to the, what is that? That's west, northwest, to the southwest. Why is that northwest? Northwest. It seems rather odd that west is to the left of northwest. Shouldn't it be? Anyway, whatever they've done, the way they've represented it. Now I'm going to have to go and confirm all of that too, like as to which constellation is where, and where is west and northwest on the horizon. I have to go and confirm that, because I've never really confirmed that particular aspect of this. But I just assumed that part, the program would have gotten that correct. It's the other things that we're not so sure about that you'd think would be much more certain. But this would be slightly to the south. If this is north, to the right here in the drawing, as it indicates right there, northwest, west, and then this would be southwest over here where Scorpius is located. Let's look at the other one again. Where is it? This one? Was that, yeah, that's the setting, yeah. Let's look at this one. Southeast, east. Yeah, the other one shows east. Yeah, it looks backwards. It looks backwards to what we think of as south and east. If east is to the right, then southeast would be, well, if we turned and looked with our, projected our head towards the east, south would be to the right. So yeah, it is right in that sense, right? And here, if we project our head toward the west, north is to the right. That's true too. Yeah. So it is right. See, I'm trying to think of the compass. If we project your head toward west on the compass, then your right hand is extended out perpendicular to your body toward the north, right? So that it, this makes some sense, that, but it seems different. It's a little bit bizarre because it's constrained by this curve of the horizon. But anyway, see, Scorpius is right along with the sun here at the setting of the sun. So Scorpius is still going to be in the sky after the sun sets, right? Because the sun is setting right now. That's what we looked at yesterday also, but we're mainly interested in this one today. Scorpius in the ascendant apparently means this, but we're allowing the discovery that we made about all the dates to be confirmed, or to determine, in fact, what the ascendant means, what it means to be in the ascendant. We'll find out later if that was right, presumably, supposedly, you know, hopefully. But you know what? This is the fourth proof. We had three different proofs, right? The Chinese chronology. We had the Sumerian chronology of Enmerkar as well, both of which indicated 2700 and something for the time of Nimrod. And then we also had, what do we have? What were our four proofs? What were three? The fourth one is going to be this astronomy here, showing Scorpion in the ascendant at the death of Osiris. That's the fourth proof. Let's look up the word independent. Is it, I think, three, okay. Three, right. Okay, I know, one way we can find it. I just don't want to have to randomly search. I'm going to search for Enmerkar and see whether we come up with right, the 2700, here it is, yeah. Well, Enmerkar, the date was about the time of the old Elamite period of 2700 BC, roughly. So we got Enmerkar from that, right? 21 times his name occurs. And Qi Yu, the Chinese ruler who corresponded to Nimrod, we date him to exactly the same time period because he fought with Shennong, who was corresponding to Shelah in the genealogy and chronology. So we had the Chinese, that one, but also the eclipse of Nimrod. That was the third one. Yeah, so we had three independent methods of gaining knowledge of the time period of the death of Nimrod, which is about 2700 and something. Even if he reigned for 69 years, right, there's still not that different from 2700. Okay. So, coming back here, we're right here now. So what did the sky look like? I asked myself, and then I went and got the sky chart program running and so on. So, but look at this heliacal rising of Venus. That's the astounding thing. Okay, we're going to find out in a second here why that is, why that's so special. But 2747 BCE, seen at Eridu, there was a rising of Venus with the sun, or just prior to the sun. as seen in the picture. The Venus rose first and then the sun, and probably would have been visible because of the distance in the number of angular degrees there between Venus and the sun, right? Mercury's probably never going to be visible because Mercury's too close to the sun, maybe. But no, even Mercury may have been visible there. You know, depending on visibility, the arc of Visionis for the planet Mercury. Now, Mercury is, I'm not sure how bright Mercury is, but Venus is pretty bright. So the arc of Visionis for Venus, we can look that up, but it's because Venus is very bright, called the morning star, Venus. But Venus is very bright. So it makes good sense that it's possible that even with this, what looks like a small distance here, but from experience, I know that's, you know, 6 or 7 degrees maybe, or 5 degrees of arc difference, based on my experience with this program and my experience studying the visibility of the moon and the planets and so on. But Mercury here, mainly we don't look much at the visibility of the planets. We look at the visibility of the moon normally. But in this case, it's Venus we're interested in, and Mercury. And why? Okay, let's get back to the article and finish this discussion so we can maybe talk about something else. You see, if Nimrod died 27 years after 2774 BCE, or the eclipse of Nimrod, 2774, 27 years after that, that is actually the year 2747 BCE, which would be the 28th year of Osiris, according to Mr. Wilkinson, when we take Osiris as the same person as Nimrod. Oops, the fire must be low now. Please excuse me. That's the end of the paragraph. But now, in this caption for the same image here of Venus and Mercury rising with the sun, this is a picture taken right when the sun was on the horizon. So Scorpio wasn't visible. Scorpius wasn't visible yet because it rises in the ascendant with the sun, after the sun. But Mercury and Venus are both there, rising before the sun. That's really important, because to astronomers, that's called an heliacal rising of a star or a planet when it rises just prior to the sun, so you can see it before the daylight completely obliterates the sky and the visibility of all the stars and planets. Because that's what happens during the day. We can't see these things. So before sunrise is when these things would have been visible. And they would have been visible because they rose first here in the east, as this is showing. This is east, so that means the sun comes up there. And that means Mercury and Venus come up there prior to the sun in this case, as they appear above the horizon by quite a distance of maybe 4, 5, 6 or more degrees. Looks like there to me, but, you know, those are the details. We've already confirmed the date by 3 other sources. We know we're in the right time period. Then we get this date of Hathor 17 aligning exactly in such a way that Mercury and Venus are both in a position of heliacal rising, and Scorpius is in the ascendant. So why is that? How incredible is it that the planets I wrote here in the caption, named after the brother and wife and Osiris himself, should possess this at dawn configuration, the day he died, or the day he was set afloat, or whatever it is. They believed he died on that day. But look at this. I mean, he died Hathor 17 according to the myth or the legend. So it's not really a myth because they gave us the date. It's more history, right? They gave us a date. Hathor 17. But Osiris was named Belus also. And that name Belus we have used more than 34 times in this article so far. I'm gonna have to edit that to show it should say thus far there, and not just the word far there. But it's also the name Belus taken to mean Osiris and Nimrod. So the sun represents Nimrod. Okay? Mercury represents Thoth, as we already said. He's Hermes, the messenger of the gods. Thoth was the one who invented writing for the Egyptians, their god, Thoth. So he's the equivalent of Mercury, Thoth. And Venus is the equivalent of the Egyptian goddess Isis, because Venus is the goddess of fertility, you know, the goddess of love, and Isis was also the goddess of fertility for the Egyptians. It's not all that straightforward. It says here, Isis I have to look at Isis here. Isis, okay. She wore a sun disk between the horns of a cow. According to Wikipedia, let's keep on. Okay. Trying to find the reference to fertility. It's rather obscure, but there are some references that say, okay, beliefs, practices, deities, symbols and objects. She was the wife of Osiris, right? Yeah. Well, I know, we just search for the name. We search for the word fertility. Right. Well, Isis was the mother of the fertility god, Mene. That's what it says there in Wikipedia. So she's definitely, she's the mother of fertility. That's pretty powerful as evidence or as the proof that she is the fertility goddess equivalent, but or something close to it, very, or even more associated, important to fertility. She's the mother of the fertility goddess. She was linked with the Greek lunar god Artemis by a shared connection with an Egyptian fertility god, Bastet. Anyway, there's something, a combination of Isis and Renenutet, who represented agricultural fertility, right? So Isis Thermuthis represented agricultural fertility, and that was a combination of Isis and Renenutet. Okay, look at that. It mentions Isis Aphrodite there too. In this article by Wikipedia about Isis. So, yeah, so we know she's closely associated with fertility. There. Her powers. Right. The cult statue of Isis was carried through their fields by the Egyptians in Roman times, probably celebrating her powers of fertility. There it is. So, yeah. But we know that Venus also was the Roman goddess, or in the, yeah, but she's also called Aphrodite in the Greek mythology. And she was the goddess of, let's search for that word, fertility. Where do we find it? She's the goddess of sex, fertility, prosperity, and victory. So there we go. So there's a close correlation between Venus, the planet, and Isis. Mercury is associated very closely with Thoth, and the sun very closely with Nimrod. So they're all three together there. On that day, Ather 17, or Hathor 17 as it's also called, but which corresponds with September 25th, 2747 BCE, which is exactly the time that we calculate as year 28 for that particular the particular god or king named Osiris, actually, because, well, why do we say that? Why do we say that it's year 27? Well, because of the eclipse of Nimrod in 2774. Minus 27 is 2747. And we go 2747, then add the minus sign, and it jumps right to the front. And then we say September 25th. Can't see my keyboard too well in the dim light. And there we have it. The Egyptian time, September 25th, is 3rd Auket 17, which is also called Hathor 17. Perfect correlation and astronomical alignment is astonishingly perfect. And I did not, or could not, possibly have arranged this to happen. This is just something that is actual fact. So that's it for our study today. We have this amazing proof that 2747 is the death of Osiris, or that the 28th century BC, roughly, is the time of all these things. Okay? Amazing proof, but it looks exact according to that, not just approximate. I want to talk a little bit about these watches now. These are imitation or homages to the Rolex watch. This is Sissy, which is a Cadison watch, costs about $100 and some. And it's incredible because the Rolex watch, of which this is an homage, to which this pays homage, costs in excess of $50,000 Canadian, because it's made of platinum. You know, it's platinum, and that's very expensive. But also Rolex watches generally cost quite a fair bit of money. But this one is the exact imitation, except larger. I think the Rolex is 40 millimeters. It's called the Day Date 40. The Rolex version of this, and the Rolex version costs $50,000. This costs $120,000, something like that. But this is made by Cadison. But we know its quality because it uses a Japanese movement. The Japanese Miyota movement. This is a non-hacking one in this particular watch, so that just means the second hand never stops, even when you're setting the time. This is also the same movement, but in a white dial made by the German manufacturer Bauhaus. She's called Iron Annie by the Bauhaus company. The name Sissy was just something that I adopted for this watch made by Cadison. These two watches are exactly the same size, because the movement is that size, and the Rolex movement is just so much smaller that the watch itself is smaller, and I have a watch that's exactly the same size as that, which I also have. I mean, I don't really have it because it doesn't work. It broke. Bye for now.